the predators are still lending money. It's the news, according to me. Good morning. It is, it's Friday morning already. See, I told you it was going to go fast. I told you on Tuesday or Monday or whenever it was I started this week. I can't remember when I started. I think it was Monday morning. I said, I said it was Tuesday and the week was rapidly passing by. Here it is, Friday. Kind of like it is in life, folks. You know, it's just, you know, you get to be 60 and you realize, well, life is really short. And I might only have, maybe 10, 20 years left. Probably 20. With my genetics and everything else, that typically in my family, it's generally people who last about in their 80s. My grandpa was in his 90s. Dad was in his 80s. My mom was in her almost 90, upper 80s. probably genetically, I'm probably looking at 80s, maybe 20 years yet. Good 20 years of life left. And after that, it's all downhill. So you start looking at that in terms of seasons, 20 more summers. 10 really good summers probably that I can actually be active and enjoy things. And then it starts to get, the aches and pains start to get to you and you can't do as much anymore. Of course, by that time, I'll probably be able to buy a brand new sailboat and all kinds of things that I can afford that I won't be able to enjoy because I'm just too old to enjoy. Not too old, but just too much pain. Who knows? I don't know. Trying to keep ourselves preserved as much as possible so we can enjoy our latter years as much as possible as well. That's the key. Right now, we're in the kind of the prime of our lives in terms of income and debt and that kind of thing. We have, in pretty good shape. Speaking of debt, I have a cup here with, surprisingly enough, I have, I found some chai. Wisconsin has a grocery store. I'm not sure if it's all over the place or not. I believe there's some in Milwaukee. So there might be all over Wisconsin. They're up here in the Green Bay, Appleton area. It's called Woodman's. If you've ever been in one of these Woodman grocery stores, it is the size of a super Walmart, but it is all grocery. Well, it's pretty much all groceries. I mean, they have some other things too. They have a little bit of kind of like, Walmart used to have, it used to be like a Kmart, and it had a few snacks and stuff. That's the way this place is. It's like only it's all groceries, but it has a few odds and ends, like, shampoo and stuff like that. It has as much of that stuff as a typical drugstore would have, like a CVS or something like that. This place is massive with regard to grocery store stuff, especially the cheese aisle. I guess that's probably part of the whole, Wisconsin thing. There's more than one cheese aisle, first of all, and it goes a whole length of the store. It's just any kind of cheese you want to imagine is pretty much there. You can't find anything. Until you find, you kind of know your way around. The first time I went in one, it took me an hour to figure out where stuff was. I walked around all the aisles trying to find where's the next thing, because it's just ridiculous. You're like a mouse in a maze. And unfortunately, and I think it's kind of about that. It's that way by design, I'm pretty sure, because if you walk in there hungry, your cart is full by the time you went in. You went in to get some, a bag of pre-boiled eggs or something, and you come out with, $200 worth of groceries. Those donuts look good. That cheese looks good. Oh, that's some of those crackers I have a hard time finding. They do have the chai that I like, and usually there's none there when I go over there. Well, I went over there yesterday, and sure enough, there was almost a half a rack of this stuff. So there's not anymore. By the way, since I've been there, most of it's gone now. Just in case you're looking, I bought them all up. I bought a few of them. Let's just put it that way. Grabbed them. So now I'm drinking the Pacific Island chai and I did bring my Cinnabon creamer along, so I have that. So I'm back in my rut again, which is what I plan on doing tomorrow as well. I'll probably do the same thing. Now there's may or may not be a show tomorrow. I don't know how that's going to work out. Not sure what I want to do with that yet. I have a few other projects I want to work on. I'm going to be starting earlier tomorrow, so that I can get done early and actually try to get home. I might actually spend the night on the boat tomorrow, but I digress. This is all This is all fluff. This is all the fluff time of the show. This is while everybody's kind of warming up, getting their coffee, getting settled in, listening, you know, getting your snuggie wrapped around you, all that stuff. But I want to talk about a few things. This debt thing. The government is in charge now of student loans. They took over that a few years ago. And now, of course, the president, by the sweep of his hand, thinks that under the emergency powers, he can just... Nancy Pelosi, not 2 weeks ago, not even, I think it was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that, she said the president can't just forgive student debt. That takes an act of Congress, because Congress has the purse strings. Well, if you listen to the speech that Biden gave about forgiving the student loan thing, he came out and said, under the authority of the Department of something, I'm going to be forgiving this, you know, doing this $10,000, $20,000 debt forgiveness thing, which amounts, not like I said yesterday, they're claiming it's $300 billion. The reports now with the actuaries that look at this thing, the actual bipartisan calculators, are saying this could go as high as $500 billion if everyone participates in it. They're counting on a percentage of people who will not participate in this. Are you kidding me? And if they're saying now that it's $500 billion by the time it's all done, I guarantee it's actually costing us more. Now, when you think about the fact that there are 300 million people in this country, I did the math on, I don't know why nobody ever does the math. This is going to cost the taxpayers. Well, let's just lay it out. How much exactly is it costing the taxpayers? It's going to add to the debt. One way or another, if you're a consumer, whether you pay federal income tax or not, if you're a consumer, you will pay for this. And right now, for every man, woman, and child in this country, we've just added $1,000 to your head that you've got to make up to pay for all this. If you're a federal income taxpayer, you got to pay a little over $3,000. It's going to be $5,000 if you count the other $200 billion that it's actually going to cost us. Thanks. Thanks for paying that for us. Now, some people are arguing, well, we're investing in the infrastructure of our country. No, these people invested in their lives with someone else's money, and they're expecting someone else to pay for it. Doesn't sound to me like their investment was very good, that the investment in that program, that degree, whatever it was they purchased, took out a loan for it. It doesn't sound like it had any appreciating value to me. Now, if you go into debt and you become a doctor or a lawyer or some kind of professional trade, if you go to a technical school and you walk out of there and you start making some money, and the next thing you know, you're able to pay off your student loans within 4 or 5 years, because you know, now you got a job, you got to start to make some money, and you start paying off those loans. That's because, guess what? It was a good investment. Now, Matt Walsh yesterday had a pretty good talk, a little bit of a talk about how why does school cost these ridiculous prices? Now, I understand an aviation program or a technical program that has to, you know, where there's a lot of money involved in operating expenses. But when it's just high dollar salaries that we're paying these professors, and the schools themselves are building edifices unto their educational prowess, when they're just blowing money on brick and mortar or monuments or, you know, fountains in the middle of the whatever it is, that's not part of your education. That doesn't add to your education. It might add to your social life and your feeling of well-being, whatever it is. But that is not adding to your education. It's not adding wealth. Or it's not adding value to your education.
Well, but we won't get the good teachers.
Well, then they shouldn't be teaching if that's all they're teaching for. Are you really getting a good teacher if the only reason they're teaching is because of the money they're making? I've always argued that some of these high schools and stuff I see being built. Now, teachers will always argue with me about this. They'll always say, "Well, but it does matter when the student shows up to a school. It matters what it looks like. Well, it needs to be clean and neat and kept well kept." Most kids, I went to a really, really old school when I was a kid, a grade school. In fact, about 2 years after I left that grade school, they made plans to tear it down and build a new school because it was so old. I think it had been built in the 40s or something like that, or 30s maybe even. Old brick building, three stories, had to go up and down steps to go to class. Old building. And looking back on it, I thought it was the biggest, most awesome building on the planet. But the neighborhood thought it was the oldest, worst-looking thing. Because people, you know, to me, I was half the size I am now, and it seemed like a big building. It had a lot of character. It was intimidating. But I learned things there. I don't remember the building as much as I remember the teachers. I don't remember anything they taught me because I just wasn't paying attention. But I did pay attention to, you know, the fact that the teachers tried to teach me something. In fact, there were three stories, but there was also a basement, so there was actually four stories total. So the first day of school, I didn't know where the bathroom was, and I was too embarrassed to ask anybody where it was, and I had a hard time because I couldn't go to the bathroom all day. I was kind of a shy kid. My first day at school, at that school, I'd come in from, I was in fourth grade, and we had moved into the area, and I was in fourth grade, and I didn't know anybody. Had a few people that kind of made friends with me right away. Ended up staying in that school system all the way to graduation. And everybody remembered that I was the kid who couldn't go to the bathroom the first day. But the next day, I figured out where the bathroom was, and I was in there about every other class. We had playgrounds with, you know, pea gravel and cement and regular dirt that we would fall on. We had slides that would, you know, peel your skin off. They were about 300 degrees in the sun. We had swings, you know, that with chains on them that you could, you know, accidentally wrap around your neck and almost lose your head. We were tough kids. We didn't have any safe spaces, I know that. Yeah, it was crazy. Somehow we survived. But I digress. The thing about this whole school thing is that the student debt. Now, you know, I listened to Dave Ramsey this morning, and you know, I agree. If you're one of the beneficiaries of this whole thing, and I have a good friend that's, he was all happy yesterday. He's like, "Well, this is turning into a good day." He goes, I had this happen, that happened, and then I got my student loans, you know, $10,000 knocked off my student loan. Well, I'm happy for you. I'm genuinely happy that you are working your way out of debt on my behalf. You can thank me. Actually, you can thank me later for helping you pay that off. What I should have said was, "You're welcome." I didn't say that, but when I went to school, I just not trying to throw coals on this thing, but when I went to college, I waited several years before I went to college because I was trying to save up money, enough money to go to college. I worked a night job at the college as a security guard, and I also worked weekends in another part-time job. And I still had to take out a loan. I went for 1 year, and I couldn't afford to go anymore. I stepped out of school. I couldn't afford to take the next year. I couldn't see myself going more further into debt. I just didn't see the value in that at the time. And I ended up, you know, I had a car at the time. And I knew I had to pay off this student loan. I think I had 1 year of deferral before I had to start actually making payments on it. I started making payments, and I said, "You know what? I gotta sell the car. I gotta pay all this stuff off." Sold the car. I ended up with a motorcycle and a bike. and paid it off, had a job. I was able to get back and forth through the summer, that summer with my motorcycle. Rain, snow, whatever, didn't matter. Into the fall, and then I finally had enough money saved up to buy a car. And it wasn't in debt for the car at that time. Had a couple of cars, actually, that I had paid cash for. And then, of course, had a decent job then for a while, and I ended up, you know, going into debt for another car. And there it kept going. There was actually a local dealer that was kind of one of those buy-here-pay-here type places. But that was before the buy-here-pay-here places were popular. There weren't any buy-here-pay-here type places at that time. This is back in the 80s. And at least in our area, there wasn't anything. He was the only one who was doing it. But he was more like this personal local guy that just wasn't kind of some kind of franchise or anything. He was just selling cars. And he just had this deal where if you showed up and he could approve you, you just started making payments and you could drive off the lot with a car. And so that's what I did. Bought a car that way. But, you know, I had to pay the car off, so. This is my wife again. She seems to know when I'm on the show, doing the show. So I have to give her a little, quick little message here. Anyway, so I never did go back to college. By the way, I did go to a trade school right out of high school. I think I've talked about that. Right out the next year out of high school, I went to a scuba diving instructor school, and I ended up coming back, starting a business, and then trying to do some other things. And I ended up going back to school a little bit for that 1 year, and then I never went back to school again formally, at least not in any kind of formal education. Got a job at an airport, pumping gas. And after that, I kind of got into a career flying airplanes, became a flight instructor, and started my own business, a little flight school. Had about 8 airplanes, a bunch of flight instructors working for me. And I built it up. That's what I did. I started with one airplane and just flew the daylights out of it until I had enough money to buy something else. And then I had some investors that wanted to invest in airplanes, and I leased them from them. They bought airplanes, and I leased them from them for the school, and then bought some of my own and leased some of the others. And on and on and on. There you go. That's how I did it. I was never one to sit around and wait for somebody else to hand me something. One of the things that was going on a while back about the banking crisis that happened in 2008, and the term, here's what happened. Back in the day, Charlie Rangel and some of the others that were involved in this whole thing, if you remember some of those people, they were involved in this thing where they wanted to give, they were saying that low-income housing and the certain individuals in the community, the minorities in the community, were not being given loans by the banks. So they made this new law that said that the banks had to give loans, a percentage of their loans that they gave had to be given out to low-income families and to minorities, gave them special rights. So they were able to take out loans. So they began to look at areas where there was what they called redlining. It wasn't redlining then, it was actually the other direction. They actually scoped out places where they could go in and offer people loans, because they were required to. They had to give a percentage of their loans had to be given to low-income housing, so they had to change the standards for them. If you have to make a certain amount of money to take out this loan, and all of a sudden we have to give you this loan regardless of how much you make, so now we got to change the standards. So they started doing that. It was called predatory lending. When those people couldn't pay their bills, when they couldn't make their payments, the banks were accused of predatory lending. They were forced to do it, basically. But then they were the villain for doing it, because they were going into those areas and giving loans to people that they knew weren't going to be able to make it, and then they would seize their homes. Banks don't want to own property. They just want to loan you the money for it. That's where they don't want to deal with the property ownership thing. They just want to make money off of your property. They just want you to send them a check for, wanting that property. That's how that works. the rules changed. And then they started calling it redlining. We're not going to loan money in those areas anymore. Well, think about the fact, and Dave Ramsey brought this up today, or yesterday actually, and it was a very good point. These people who are saying, well, these poor people are out there, they can't afford to pay their loans, and we got to help them. We got to give them some relief. And yet today, this very day, there will be people applying for student loans, and they will be getting them. Should they expect to have to pay their loans back too? Or are they going to expect forgiveness on their loans? Are they going to give them the first $10,000 free? How does that work? See, because they're continuing to give these loans out, and it's the government doing it because they're in charge of all the student loans now. These knuckleheads have no sense of fairness whatsoever. When they talk about equity and fairness, they don't care about that. That's all a construct. That's all ambiguous and in their heads. It's not, it's just a talking point. It's a political football. Because they're still giving loans to people who can't afford to pay them back. For the same social workers who aren't going to make any money. They're going to be working in volunteer jobs, not going to make any money, and they're going to expect the government to bail them out. That's how it works. And that's where we are. Now, Dave Ramsey believes that there's going to be a bloodbath in terms of the voting shift that's going to happen in November. I hope so. But at the same time, I wish there was another party besides the Democrats or the Republicans. I don't like the fact that the Republicans are going to win just by the fact that they're not Democrats. That's not just that just gravels me to no end. They're not doing anything to win their vote. And when they get into office, they're going to sit back and try to be responsible. They're not going to educate the people on why conservative principles are important and why we should live that way. They're not going to do that. So I digress, and I hear my bumper music coming in. So at this point, I just want to say, have a great weekend, Shabbat Shalom, and we will be praying for our nation, praying for our country, praying for each other. God bless everybody. Have a great weekend. Have a great evening. Thanks for listening.